Welcome to the Science Slot Machine.
Brought to you by students of the Science, Technology, and Society Master's Program at the University of Vienna. In this podcast, we explore topics from the very notable to the very niche.
We always keep an eye on how science, technology, and society relate to one another in various aspects. We discuss hot topics, but also suggestions by you.
Check us out on social media and be sure to send us your topic suggestions to science.machine@gmail.com.
Good evening, folks. It is a beautiful Friday evening. Welcome to the Science Slot Machine podcast. As always, I'm joined here by the beautiful Robbie and also the beautiful Costa. And we're going to talk to you today. We're going back to our roots a little bit and taking a nice listener suggestion. Shout out. Thank you to Cyntha, also from the STS program in Vienna. Today, we're going to be discussing Vienna as a livable city. First off, how are you guys doing? Robbie, check in. How's your week going?
Yo, yo, yo. Everything good here. I'm kind of enjoying my time, actually. I'm a bit busy with work and university, but you know how it is. Nothing new for anyone.
Great. And Costa, how are you doing today, man?
I'm also fine, thank you. This week is kind of a good week for me, and I'm looking forward very much to the weekend also.
Yeah, I have to say the same. It was a nice, lolly week. Not much to do versus the last week was quite hectic as far as our uni stuff goes, but we're always excited to be here with you guys at the podcast and looking forward to this discussion. So I guess I'll just shoot it right off with a question. Maybe one of you can jump in. What is the most livable city? Is this some type of award? Is it a ranking? How does this work?
So as far as I know, actually Vienna is the most livable city in the world. If you follow certain rankings, and there is a lot of them out there, and so most of them award Vienna actually the most livable city in the whole world, which is kind of fascinating, as we are living in Vienna, we three, and yeah, it is an award. It's a ranking, I would say. There is no trophy or something, I think, as far as I know. I haven't seen this, but yeah, in general, there's different types of rankings, and in most of them, Vienna is quite good.
Right, and Vienna's been good for the last couple of years, right? It's won livable city quite a few times now.
Yeah, exactly. So for the past 10 years roundabout, Vienna, in all of these different rankings, has been quite top, and like there are some other cities which are also quite livable if you follow the guidelines and the rankings. But in the recent years, yes, Vienna has become one of the most livable cities in all over the world.
And I have just another question. So maybe this is more than it's just one committee or something, but Robbie, is this decided by a committee or is this just an issue of measurability? Is there a lot of people measuring livability?
That's actually a hard question. Maybe Costa can answer it to later. But what I wanted to jump in with is that Vienna has actually been nominated for the most livable city 7 times in a row and has been getting the first place for the past 2 years. We are kind of curious to see where we're gonna score now in 2020. So yeah, maybe Costa can introduce us a bit better to the whole concept of how choosing the most livable city in the world works, because honestly, none of us knew at the beginning how this is actually being measured and what institution this award is given by. So Costa, go for it.
Will do. Okay, so what we're talking about is one type of statistic, and this is produced by the Mercer company. Mercer is actually a consultancy firm with over 25,000 employees worldwide and a turnover of $4.2 billion per year. So that is quite a company. And this company, this consultancy firm, according to 39 criteria in 10 categories, does assess the 250 cities all over the world. So it's not only the most livable cities, but also all types of cities around the globe. And it's not only the 39 criteria which they assess, but also they complement this by some interviews. And these interviews are with so-called expats. Now you may ask yourself, what is an expat? And we also ask ourselves this question. And expats are people who come to work in Vienna or in other cities, apparently, but only for a certain amount of time. So they are in the terms of the consultancy firm, or in the thoughts of the consultancy firm, they are supposed to be good interviewees for assessing a city's livability.
Ha! In that regard, I have a question for you guys. An expat and a migrant walk into a bar. How do you tell them apart?
Poo.
That sounds like a trap. That sounds like you're trying to get me with some type of stereotype.
Yeah, I don't want to say something like...
expat pays with the credit card and the migrant pays with cash. I don't know.
Actually, there is no answer to this question.
Yeah, it was a trap. I knew it.
I just wanted us to emphasize a bit more on the differences between a migrant or an expat. Exactly, because it sounds like a synonym, but they are not exactly synonyms.
Yeah, exactly. That is one critique that is often formulated in terms of these rankings, and especially this one by the Mercer company, that expats are asked and not like citizens that have been living in the city for longer or have some background, migration background or whatever. And so expats, if you generalize this, expats often are people, high educated people who can afford or have a really good paid job, well paid job in cities. So they are not, expats in general are not people that are leaving a country because of war or something. But rather, they are searching for nice jobs, well-paid jobs in cities.
So just to sum it up, what is the difference between immigrants and expats? Immigrants are usually defined as people who have come to a different country in order to live there permanently, whereas expats moved abroad for a limited amount of time or have not yet decided upon the length of their stay. Also, maybe it would be useful to touch upon some of the criteria we mentioned earlier in terms of what makes a city livable, just so our listeners kind of know what exactly we're talking about.
Yeah, I'd also be interested in that, Costa. What are some of these examples of the categories and how are they measured? Is this a quantitative thing, a qualitative thing, or maybe you can expand a little?
Yeah, sure. So there are 10 categories. I will just briefly give you some examples. For instance, the political and social environment of a city is important, meaning political stability, crime statistics, law enforcement, and stuff like that. Another example is economic environment. So how are banking services, how is currency exchange regulations going? Of course, medical and health environment, so to say. They always frame it as environment. So you could also say medical and health infrastructures, for instance. Then another point is schools and education, public services and transportation is important. Also recreation. And what is also really important, especially when we think of it in terms of Vienna, for example, housing. How do people live? How affordable is it to live in a city? Yeah, these are just some key points that are measured, so to say. Because Harry, you asked, how is this actually measured? And that is a good question because the information about that is really rare. So what we can say is that these criteria are quantitative analysis of statistical data complemented by the qualitative interviews. But we really don't know about it too much because there's no publication or anything on that. And it's not like these are so to say scientists that are publishing in a journal or whatever.
So then to say measurement is only one part of it. Maybe it would be better to look at it in terms of an appraisal, so an estimate or something, and then measurement plays a role in it. It's just part of the analysis or part of this appraisal. Sort of when you go into a home or value a good and you measure certain things, compare it with others, but there's multiple parts that come in. It's not just a comparison of data, so therefore measurement. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think a major issue we noticed when doing our research was that the process in general is not very transparent when it comes to who exactly is being interviewed. And clearly experts, but from what regions and why are not the local people also asked to share their opinion? And talking about measurements, I think Austria in general and the city of Vienna really, really put effort into producing quality statistics on various topics, but especially migration. And this allows them to observe different social processes happening, and simply they're able to track the development and make sure the city the people live in is livable and that it maintains high standards.
So I guess then, I don't know if this is an answerable question, but I throw it out there. What is keeping Vienna up there in those categories to make it Vienna specific? You know, because there's some cities that come and go. And if I look at the list, it seems very repetitive list of Europe, Australia, sometimes Japan, and every once in a while, Canada. But Vienna is a mainstay in this list and seems to always be there. And so what makes it livable or the most livable compared to other places in relation to those categories?
Yeah. Honestly, I think the city of Vienna is really badly trying to fulfill the wishes of the people living in the city. And if you track back the history of Vienna, you would see that Vienna has always been somehow ahead of its time. And Vienna has always been a city of innovation, a city of art, a city of science. And for example, it's been called the city of music simply because big part of the top classical music composers like Mozart, Beethoven, Haydn, Franz Schubert, Johann Strauss have been working and living in Vienna at some point of their lives. And you can also call it the city of dreams because of Freud and like the father of psychoanalysis. So when you track that back in time, you can actually understand why Vienna has been scoring so high for so many years. Because the locals have been trying to adapt every positive and negative feedback simply to make the city nice and livable. And something else I stumbled upon that I find interesting is a project that is for whole Europe, actually. And it's called the European Capital of Democracy. And Vienna, of course, is participating quite actively. So it is an initiative that aims to promote democracy in various cities in Europe, and it's starting in 2021. So it's kind of going to represent the opinions of 10,000 Europeans, and I think that's really a nice way to show the variety of viewpoints around Europe, because as we spoke in our previous episode about the US election, how people understand democracy in different places also could be very different. So I'm really glad that Vienna is actually taking this project so seriously, the capital of democracy. And in relation, again, to this project, I want to share with you guys a quote by the mayor of Vienna, Michael Ludwig, who says, "To be successful, a city requires participation and cohesion. It must have the objective of enabling its citizens to shape their city together." So this, I think, really reveals the core of the mindset of the Viennese and the Austrian government of how shaping and constructing of livable spaces should actually work. Like, we should make, like, the idea is we should make it together and we should do it in a way that works for everyone.
That's really, really interesting. And as you guys know, we're a casual podcast, but we're also an STS podcast. So I have some challenging questions for you guys both. And I want you to do your best to try to answer them because I am curious. So I follow the argument and I follow the history of Vienna and I see that. I also am familiar with this book quite a bit and I understand that capital, democracy, participation, these things seem easy to quantify because it might not be a whole measurement, but you still at the end of the day have to put cities up against each other. Does anybody have any immediate thoughts? How do you quantify culture, music, visuals, museums? Do you look at attendance? What do you do? And what does this mean for the citizen who is imagined here as an inhabitant of Vienna that lives in Vienna?
Good question.
I really worked on that one.
I have actually, to be honest, I have no idea how culture is measured there in the statistics.
Your question actually reminds me of something that actually I wish I could say I read, but I actually heard because lately I'm really into audiobooks. So it's an STS perspective on states and cities, and I'm referring to the book by James Scott, Seeing Like a State, where he pays a lot of attention on how the construction of cities look like, but not in the sense of culture, but mostly in terms of architecture, which we know is something quite developed here in Austria. And Vienna is famous with its beautiful buildings and has been set as an example for architecture all over the world, literally. So what Scott talks about, he kind of compares the architecture in communist and democratic societies like Austria, for example, and how architects could have different visions about what is proper architecture. Like one could be focused more on the pragmatic side and the other one more on the aesthetic side. So you could build in communist countries, for example, in communist architecture, you could build standardized living spaces for classless societies, which creates the special segregation in urban planning somehow. And I think this is super interesting, especially in the case of Vienna, because Vienna is considered like super high-end architecture that embraces creativity and intellect at the same time. And here, architecture and this kind of vision about things is a very big part of the culture.
Robbie, you mentioned Michael Ludwig, the mayor of Vienna, the current mayor of Vienna. And I actually have a quote from Michael Häupl, the former mayor of Vienna, well known for his policies and also his ability to drink some Spritzwein and also on Tuesday at lunchtime. But nevertheless, he made a statement about Vienna. And what he said is, Vienna is one of the most livable cities in the world. This is largely due to the great variety of cultural life and the diversity of the local population. After all, a city like this never stops moving. He said that in 2010, and here you can see also the mayor of Vienna makes a claim about Vienna being one of the most livable cities. So these rankings we are talking about, they do matter also in terms of presenting your city as a mayor, presenting Vienna. And he's also pointing to the fact or to the claim that there is a variety of cultural life and a big variety in cultural life in Vienna. And he points to the diversity of the local population. But as Robbie mentioned already, she took a look at the statistics. What do they tell us?
Oh, yeah. The statistics are quite interesting. And as I mentioned earlier, Austria and the city of Vienna pay super special attention to statistics, which I find great, especially as someone who has background in social sciences. So give me the numbers and the percentages. Back to the point. They have been tracking different processes in society in terms of population and migration for many years. And I found a few statistics focusing mostly on the period from 2004 to 2019. And Vienna has grown with over 300,000 new residents for the past 15 years. I cannot say if that's a lot, but it's certainly a big number.
Good point, Harry.
Yeah, good point. That includes me, I think. but not officially yet. I'm still waiting on that residence permit thing, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and I found it actually quite curious to see how those new residents are distributed in the city. And as you know, Vienna has 23 districts, right? And each of them carries its own stereotypes in one way or another. So for those of you who live in Vienna, you probably wouldn't be surprised if I tell you that the district with the most inhabitants for the past 15 years is, drum rolls please, the 10th district, Favoriten, the favorite district, right? Followed by number 20 district, Floridsdorf. Both of them have over 50,000 newly arrived members, if we can call them, since 2004. And another fun fact, if I can even call it like that, is the concentration of foreigners, expats and migrants, who do not have an Austrian citizenship, and the most of them are actually located in the 15th district, with almost 42% of the people living there who do not possess an Austrian citizenship.
Yeah, maybe for the listeners, it might be a good idea to paint a picture about Siena, or about Vienna and how it's laid out. So when we talk about districts, it's what we call a European style. It's based in a circle. So maybe Costa's been here a while. He can describe it. It starts in the first, and then how does it proceed from there?
So Vienna is mostly known for the first district. This is the center, the old town, where all these beautiful streets and also the Stephansdom, for instance, is all of the ring streets.
Let's just make it visually. It's called a ring because it's a what?
Because it's a ring.
It's a circle. A ring.
Yes. The districts are laid up like a circle.
Yeah.
So they work out from the first, which is the middle. And if you're an American listener, this is almost equivalent to a downtown. In Europe, you call this a city center. So this would be the first district. And then if you just want to pull up a map, if you're curious, you can see that it's laid out like many other European cities and works its way around. So if you hear a high number, the chances are it's probably further outside on the ring. Not always, but most of the time.
Exactly. Thank you for explaining that to me, the person that has lived here a little longer.
I just got to put it in. You know, I'm a dumb person, so I usually put it in dumb person terms.
That's good.
Also, it's interesting to mention that there are many statistics and debates on how living in particular district impacts your quality of life. So this is very strongly related to the topic of Vienna as a livable city. So let's hear what our friends Vicky and Sonia from the 6th district have to say about the pros and cons of living in Vienna.
I like Vienna for its infrastructure, variety of cultural events, and a beautiful architecture. I also like it because I feel safe and I can get to almost every part of the city in a really short time. And the thing that I would like to improve or that I don't like that much is that there are not enough green spaces in the inner part of the city.
I just love Vienna. Everything from its greenery and its green surroundings, or go swimming in summer, to different music scenes and museums, obviously, all the cultural things that you can do. And I love Vienna for being quite cycling friendly, so to say. It's great to be able to ride the bike in Vienna and to enjoy the freedom that it brings with it. However, I also love Vienna for the things that are not so obvious. These things that for us are invisible are actually something super luxurious and something that should not be taken for granted.
That's another thing that we could bring up, is cycling friendly as compared to what, right?
I do think it's very friendly for
Same.
People who are cycling.
Same.
I mean, I disagree.
Yeah, exactly. Strongly. Go to Bulgaria, though. Man, have you ever been to Los Angeles? Like, you can't drive a bike fucking anywhere, like, unless you're at the beach. Then there's a bike place. But, like, this is amazing. There's actually, like, a dedicated lane that you put your bike.
Yeah, but next to a car. who might hit you the next
Yeah, second. Not everywhere, though. When you're in the center, then there's those nice bike lanes, right?
That's why they're not asking local people about their opinion, because they're only complaining.
Exactly. And that is also what I would mention. Like the typical Viennese style of being, style of saying things, style of complaining about things. This is what you don't, you as an expat or a person that only lives here for, I don't know, some months, you might not be touched upon by that, but and you don't care maybe because you might be gone in some months. But as a person who lives here for a longer time, you need to engage with Viennese people, and this is not nice sometimes.
Yeah, I agree. If you weigh the situation, and if I'm going to be honest, I know exactly why they interview expats and they don't interview Viennese local residents. I also assume to know why they interview expats and not migrants. Because if you're the imagined citizen, there's an assumption that goes somewhat like this, that an expat comes and uses all the resources and things more often than the migrant comes. So, for instance, museums, cultural centers, things like this. And they are assumed to know more about livability, right?
But what is an imagined citizen? What do you mean?
When I think about an imagined citizen, the imagined citizen is someone that utilizes the things that make Vienna livable. So, for instance, they go to museums, they take advantage of the nightlife, they use public transportation, they use the bike lanes. They're not the person that walks to work, they're not the person that drives a car everywhere, they're not the person even that lives on the outer districts of the city. They live in the center or close to the center. They like the public transportation. They use maybe their bikes. They go for nice rides and they take advantage of the restaurants. They eat out quite a lot and they go to museums. This is what I mean by the imagined citizen in the livable Vienna.
So this sounds to me like they have a lot of money, do they?
I think that they might tend to have that because people that get to migrate to Vienna and become expats and not migrants tend to move because they have a work opportunity that is not something that's just working as a waiter. It's usually what we call in plain American terms, they're white collar workers. Expats tend to be white collar workers, not blue collar workers.
And would you say the majority of people living in Vienna are white collar workers, or are there also other people?
Absolutely not. The majority of people in Vienna are definitely not white collar workers, but
yeah, they're black collar workers. They're doing the dirty job.
Yes, I think though that Robbie has an interesting point about this. Robbie, as far as I know, you looked into the income differences in the districts, and I've taken a look at this, and this is quite startling. So, if we're thinking about the imagined person living in Vienna and taking advantage of these things, and with Costa's point that the expat tends to be more better off financially, what can you say about that? Where do these white-collar expats most likely live?
Yeah, actually, thanks for bringing that up, because I think there is a very interesting correlation between the districts with the least foreigners and the districts where most of the people with the highest income are focused and concentrated. And I decided to dig a bit more. And of course, I used legitimate sources like Statistic Austria or directly the website of the city of Vienna. So for our listeners, maybe it's not a bad idea that you actually prepare a map of the city, like in the districts, just so you can orient yourself what exactly I'm talking about. But what I found interesting is that actually, the districts with the least foreigners are the 23rd, Leasing, the 13th, Heatsink, and the first one, of course, the inner city or the downtown, which is kind of basically the same information that you get when you're looking for the cities where most of the people are with the higher income who are living in the city, which are, once again, the inner city, Heatsink, and number 19, Döbling. And this kind of made me wonder if this is a politics of the city to segregate people with different incomes in different districts, or did it happen somehow naturally? Because as we know from sociology and anthropology, people tend to stay in groups that are familiar. Like, the concept of belonging is very important for humans. So if you come from a particular country, that's quite different culturally than Austria, you would seek to integrate in a community that reminds you of your culture, if you understand what I mean. But if you look at this demographic map of Vienna, if I can call it like that, taking into consideration this distribution of high and low income households, you will see that the better living standard districts are located in the outskirts of Vienna, where it's green, quiet, and so on. So I find this actually a very interesting social phenomenon.
No, it's really interesting, Ravi. And I don't want to get our listeners too angry here, because I know we're talking about a livable city, and maybe they thought that they would hear great things about how livable the city is. And I don't want to take anything away from that. From my perspective, it's very livable. But I have to identify that I am somewhere between that blue and white collar. I'm a student, right? I have certain privileges that other people don't. I don't have to work all the time during the week. I use public transportation. I live somewhere where there is pretty good bike access, and I get to see these things, and not really, my mode of comparison is pretty favorable towards Vienna. But as STS often does, let me play devil's advocate for a second, and maybe you guys can link some of these concepts together. So you guys have asked me about who is this imagined citizen. I have to ask you, who is Vienna not livable for?
So I think what Vienna is well known for is the public transport, green spaces, housing being affordable and stuff like that. But there indeed are some people for whom it is not really livable. Like you mentioned, there are different income areas within Vienna. And so people with lower incomes tend to live in the same area, not in between people with more income, of course. So this is a good question, because also there are some homeless people in Vienna, and how livable is Vienna for homeless people? What I read in the news last week is that the EU Commission now stated that they will try to avoid being homeless from 2030 on. But from what I have seen, homeless people are around in Vienna, and not only in some districts, but in quite many, actually.
Right. And the Corona situation is probably made this distinction even more dramatized, right? Like, this has definitely played an impact.
For sure. I mean, now with both Corona and the winter coming, this is particularly dangerous for people that are being homeless. And, there in Vienna, there are actually some places where they can sleep for a night or for longer. But right now, because due to Corona, there's not that much space for, mm-hmm. for a lot of people. So yeah, that is pretty difficult right now.
Right. But I would venture to say that there is a relation here, and it's not for the benefit of the homeless people, no matter how good their situation is. But if you have the expats, and the more homeless people they see, if it's not just a measurement, their opinion about Vienna as a livable city might be changed. For instance, there's certain reasons besides just cost that American cities never make it onto this. And I have to say that a big reason about that is just the visible homelessness. If you're taking the opinions of expats, there might be some correlation to Europeans or others that come and have never seen something like this before. Right? If it's not just measurability that's accounted for, there's also an atmosphere that's there.
Yeah. This immediately reminds me of what Sonia, our friend from the 6th district, mentioned earlier about the visible and invisible aspects of what makes a city livable. Because from what we hear from the opinions of our friends about the pros and cons of living in Vienna, the stuff they mention, like there are a lot of events, very nice environment, it's very green, education is great, public service is nice. Those stuff absolutely overlap with the categories presented for the competition Vienna or whatever else city as a livable city that Costa touched upon at the beginning. But this got me thinking, there are like so many things that we experience but we don't really see, and that's why we never recall them in terms of such categories. Like all those people that are homeless, for example, they experience the livability of Vienna in a totally different way from us. Because for them, other components are much more important than what kind of events are happening or how cool the museums are. And there are so many different social groups around the city that could be interviewed and asked about their opinion. And then we would for sure find out so much more issues and stuff that could be improved in the city than just looking from the perspective of the general Viennese resident, be it permanent or not. So I remember a while ago in an STS discussion in class, we talked exactly about the importance of defining the issue. Like once you find the social groups that are most impacted by a particular policy, technology, event, whatsoever, you can really see through and find the relevant issues. And once you have them in mind and consider them in your actions, you could talk about proper solutions. So in the future, I think in similar surveys as the one for the most livable city in the world, they should include the perspectives of more diverse groups, because also the opinions and understandings of the younger generations differ a lot from the ones of the elderlies. And everyone has very different expectations about the perfect city. And when we talk about the perfect citizens, the imagined citizens, we should not forget to mention the different imaginaries about how the perfect city should look like.
Yeah. And what you're saying reminds me of a term from social science research, which is relevant social groups. So relevant social groups could be asked within this process of studying the livability of a city. And I think what you're suggesting is that there might be some adjustments in these rankings. But I guess this has also to do with the origin of the ranking. So it's a consultancy firm still. We need to remind ourselves of that. And it's not like social scientists doing that.
Right. There's it's a commercial aspect, right? This is not a pure instance of research. This is commercial research, and there's incentives for the city to get this. Maybe not a direct financial incentive, but various things that could become financial. So there's many things at play here. It's not an academic study, and it's not concerned with asking other actors. It has its actors that it wants to ask, and that's the framework for doing so.
Exactly. Robbie, you mentioned Michael Ludwig before, so the mayor of Vienna, and what he said on the headwind and what he thinks about the city. And, dear listeners, you must know that recently, if you don't know yet, you must know that Vienna has a new coalition since the elections. So there were some discussions with whom to make a coalition, but now there's a decision. And finally, it turned out that the SPÖ has been reigning in Vienna since decades, like forever. Vienna is also called the Red Vienna. Oh, there was a time when Vienna... You're a historian, Harry. You might know better.
I explain it. The SPÖ is it's the Social Democratic Party. It's been in power for about 100 years in Vienna as a stronghold. There's been some intermittent periods where it hasn't been, but it's almost always the leading vote getter here in a country that's otherwise almost middle conservative. Or also right wing. I was being very nice there. So Vienna is called almost disparagingly Red Vienna by the other members of Austria and other citizens. So there's a history here, and it's a long legacy. But in particular, for the listeners, what can you say about the significance of this coalition now?
I mean, the coalition is the first ever coalition of the SPÖ, so the Social Democrats, and the NEOS. The NEOS is a liberal party within Vienna who has not yet been part of a coalition. So this is the first time, not only in Vienna, but in all over Austria, that they are part of a coalition. And it's, they frame it, so to say, as the coalition of future. So they really want to put Vienna forward, look into the future. How is Vienna supposed to look like in the future in terms of education, environment, digitization, stuff like that? And so I will briefly give you some of the aspects that they are mentioning in their program, in their coalition program. One of them is, the path to becoming a model climate city is to be continued. So they really want to get on with this, with Vienna as a climate-friendly city. Therefore, also a climate law is passed. And till 2030, Vienna is supposed to be a CO2-neutral city. Therefore, the coalition also wants to focus on public transport and the model split. Do you know what the model split is, Harry?
No, Costa, I don't, but maybe you can explain it for me.
I knew that you don't know this. But it is the ratio of distances traveled in the city per mode of transport. Ah. So the more you travel with public transport, the more of the model split goes to public transport. And this in Vienna is quite okay, I would say, but still there's some space for improvement, of course, and they want to keep on working on that. Then, for instance, concerning education, 14 different and further campus locations are to be created, one of them being at the Otto Wagner area. You might not know it, but it's in the western part of the city. And there was, in the last days, there was some rumor about a gondola system being in plan there. But yeah, we will see how this will figure out. So two other points are, one, first, the digitization in the healthcare sector, for instance, is to be further promoted. And the budget, as we talked earlier, the budget for cycle path is actually quadrupled. So you see, there is some space for improvement, as I mentioned. But this, of course, is only the plan of the coalition. You know, in politics, there's always a plan, which looks really nicely, and then there's reality and real political decisions to be made. But what do you think of this future that is there?
I mean, I think one thing that I notice here looking, like I always do, unfortunately, is with the historical lens, is playing on that. So there seems to be playing on a history or a past. So in the 70s, the SPÖ had kind of a movement of transition, and a movement therefore came forward, which is called Austrian Keynesianism. So when you think, I just want to make sure that an SPÖ, we're not talking about socialists. These are capitalists, but they believe in direct state intervention in the economy. So the things that Costa is talking about here is a very, very active state government and a very, very active city role of government to make Vienna a livable place. In other words, to not leave it to private companies, but to take the initiative of making Vienna livable.
But you see, with this coalition now, the liberals are taken into account. So it's the first Social Democrat liberal coalition. There you see also a trend that has been going on not only in Austria or not only in Vienna, but globally, actually, that liberal ideas or economically liberal ideas have been put in forward and haven't put into attraction.
Whoa, guys, that was amazing. I don't think I can add anything more to what you said, to be honest. So before we wrap it up, would you like to kind of summarize all the STS angles we could use to look at the topic of Vienna as a livable city? We mentioned already the imagined citizen and the imagined visions of the city, and we also briefly talked about the various actors included in decision making, such as different parties, organizations, universities, and so on. So can you come up with something else?
So all this conversation has led me to this point where I'm thinking about this. And when we're thinking about livable cities, it seems to be looking towards the future a lot. And this is what STS has been fascinated with in recent years, is thinking about the futures. Costa, how are there any STS scholars thinking about this, and what type of things are they writing or thinking about when they're thinking about futures?
So I look deep down in terms of literature and search for some STS literature and nice papers. And I actually came up with something. For instance, a paper by Thaddeus R. Miller from this year, actually, 2020, which is called Imaginaries of Sustainability, the Technopolitics of Smart Cities. So here we can see the term imaginaries, that is towards the future. And what he writes is that imaginaries of sustainability represent visions of social and natural well-being now and into the future. And this is connected to the socio-technical imaginaries that Jasanoff and Kim came up with, a concept that is well and widely known in STS. And Thaddeus R. Miller also connects this to the city. So the city is characterized as a living laboratory or a technopolitical assemblage, like actor network theory kind of would talk about it. Actor network theory is another STS or sociology branch, I would say, or stream towards analyzing and looking at the world. And here Miller says that smart cities are important sites to analyze the convergence and tension between socio-technical and sustainability imaginaries. So he tries to connect sustainability and socio-technical imaginaries. And questions we might ask here are, for instance, how do they relate to and shape understandings of social and political order? So here comes back in the political side of the coin. How does this shape urban infrastructures? And what is the role of knowledge claims in these technopolitical projects? So smart cities as a vision of the future, and also Vienna here has a strong claim to be a smart city in some years, or to be it now, actually. And we have some further research in our STS department here in Vienna. But it's so what Miller wants to point out at the towards the end of his paper is that STS researchers also have the possibility to provide alternative imaginaries. And that is a really big and important point within STS, to put forward alternative ways of doing and making future. Another term that is widely known within STS is technopolitics. So the concept of technopolitics. And Andrew Karvonen, also in 2020, wrote a paper about urban technopolitics. And he thereby refers to Langdon Winner, who some people might know. He's an STS scholar, and in 1984 argued that technologies are not merely aids to human activity, but also powerful forces acting to reshape that activity and its meaning.
So, I love him. Sorry for interrupting, but I love this paper, Do Artifacts Have Politics? It's very strongly related to constructing urban spaces and architecture. So if you have time, just check it out.
Yeah, exactly. It's an inspiring paper and it has relevance also now. And this is particularly interesting and relevant because in contemporary cities where technologies are having profound and widespread influence on everyday activities of urban residents, the network flows of goods and services and the circulations and accumulation of capital and power play a role. So the politics and technology, which are inherent to technologies, do play a role. So there are actually three trajectories that Karvonen in the paper points to. And this is knowing, governing, and imagining. So these three terms are also widely known terms in STS, and therefore he argues that new urban science should be installed, network modes of governance, and the promotion of urban socio-technical imaginaries. There's also a quite famous known STS scholar whose name is Thomas F. Guerin. You might have heard of him, and he wrote a paper in 2005 about city as truth spot, laboratories and field sites in urban studies. And in this paper, he refers to the Chicago School, which was a social empirical research group, acting in the 1918 to 1932. And this is quite common in sociology, but also in STS, some people refer to it. Some names from the Chicago School are Robert E. Park, William I. Thomas, or Ernest W. Burgess. And they did a lot of ethnographic studies in their city, which was Chicago. And they did empirical social research and tried to have the city as a truth spot. And so Thomas F. Guerin argues that this also applies nowadays, and cities can be seen both as both laboratories and field sites for urban studies, also for STS scholars.
Wow, Kosta, thank you so much. It's amazing input on how STS scholars look at it. So before we wrap it up, I just want to invite all of you listeners to check out one of our previous episodes dedicated to the coffee culture of Vienna. If you want to learn more about Vienna itself as a city, as a livable city, and more about the cultural traditions that are connected to it. And as a goodbye, we are greeting you with a song from Billy Joel called Vienna, who sings, "Slow down, you crazy child. When will you realize Vienna waits for you?"
Can you please sing that again?